Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to address this group. I am one of the people that many years ago attended the Arden House conferences, so I'm one of the Alter Kämpfer, I guess, would be the expression. Tonight I want to follow up with something that's a little bit radical, as you'll see. And let me start by stating a thesis. The present domestic and international monetary and banking systems have slipped into the initial stages of terminal dissolution. In their present forms, they cannot survive. Now, this is not my own poor opinion, but the considered view of no less than the United Nations Economic and Social Council. In July of this year, it published a report entitled United Nations World Economic and Social Council Survey 2010, which stated, and I quote, "The risk of exchange rate instability and a hard landing of the dollar could be reduced by having a global payments and reserve system which is less dependent on one single national currency." And then it went on to say, and I quote, "A new global reserve system could be created, one that no longer relies on the United States dollar as the single major reserve currency." Well, this is double plus duck speak for our present funny money scam is coming apart at the seams and we need to set up a new Ponzi pyramid before the old one collapses. That's what they're really saying. But if not in its prescription, then in its description, it certainly states the truth. The question then is, what are those people in this country who are alert to this danger to do? Are they to sit idly by and simply allow the worst to happen? Well, they also serve who only stand and wait cannot be the watchword in the coming conflict. Remaining aloof will not be a viable option. No hope is to be found in the notion, so popular at financial conferences, that various clever ways exist for individuals to profit personally from the collapse of the reigning monetary and banking systems. Speculators may conjure profits to be reaped from increases in the so-called price of gold, going up, 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 and up, but this is a lamentable econological fallacy, if I may quote a term, because it measures the value of gold in terms of another and an unstable currency, Federal Reserve notes. Astute Americans need to envision and then to bring about a new monetary system in which no one talks about the price of gold, but only about prices in gold. No price of gold exists when a fixed weight of gold is the actual unit of money. Under those circumstances, all prices are stated in terms of gold. When a fixed weight of gold is the unit of money, the price of gold is essentially a meaningless concept, or at best it's a tautology. Namely, the price of a unit of gold is precisely a unit of gold. So, other than waiting for disaster to supervene, exactly what is to be done, if I may quote Lenin? Well, there are at least three basic plans kicking around out there for dealing with the present situation. First, the plan of the international political and financial crime families to maintain their empire of funny money. Secondly, various plans for reforming and regulating the Federal Reserve System and somehow returning to something that some people call a gold standard based on a redeemable currency that is somehow backed by gold. And third, a plan for replacing the present unstable and unsustainable monetary system with an entirely new one based upon economically sound, honest, and constitutional money by introducing into the free market through state governments an alternative currency consisting solely of gold with no admixture of paper and then letting competition between the Federal Reserve notes and specie settle the matter once and for all. Well, at this point, a little bit of careful analysis is in order. Now, I won't go into great details about this supranational monetary regime for two reasons. First, it's mostly speculative. And secondly, I'm sick and tired about worrying about what they're going to do as opposed to what we're going to do. So we come back to that question. What is to be done by Americans to protect themselves? Well, basically, they have two choices. First, they can try to salvage or repair, restore, and then control the present Federal Reserve System, or they can provide themselves with an entirely new currency. Now, let's look at the salvaging of the Federal Reserve System as a possibility. I think it's more than 50 years now since Professor Walter E. Spahr rather starkly summed up the situation, I quote, "So long as a government has the power over a people that is provided by an irredeemable currency, all efforts to stop a government disposed to lead a people into socialism tend to be and probably will be futile. The people of the United States have observed all sorts of efforts, organized and individual, to bring pressure upon Congress to end its spending orgy and processes of socialization. It should be amply clear by this time that none of these efforts has succeeded. Moreover, there is no reason for supposing that any of them, except the restoration of redeemability, can succeed in arresting our march into socialism. That's over 50 years ago he said this. Well, with all due respect to the memory of Professor Spahr, however, I think that the fundamental problem is not irredeemable currency. It is and always has been redeemable currency. At base, the delusion that the thing being redeemed, a paper note, is the actual money, not the thing in which redemption is made, a piece of gold or silver. Revealingly, not even the original Federal Reserve Act made this error. Section 16 of the Act provided, and I quote, "Federal Reserve notes shall be obligations of the United States, shall be receivable by all national member banks and Federal Reserve banks for all taxes, customs, and other public dues. They shall be redeemed in gold on demand at the Treasury Department of the United States or in gold or lawful money at any Federal Reserve bank." Observe, at the very first, Federal Reserve notes were denominated what? Obligations. That is, instruments and evidence of debt. And if Federal Reserve notes from the start were to be redeemed in gold or lawful money, they obviously were not conceived to be gold or to be lawful money. So because the only money the law recognizes is by hypothesis lawful money, by law, Federal Reserve notes were never money in that sense at all, but some substitute for money. The monetary conjurer's trick has been slowly, steadily, and stealthily to reverse this understanding in the public's mind. The subterfuge was not overly difficult to put over. After all, in the term redeemable currency, which is the noun and which is the adjective? When people deal with a paper currency redeemable in gold, the natural, uninstructed inclination is to treat the paper currency as money and the gold as something else. The paper currency, as the saying goes, is merely backed by gold, but of course is not itself gold. And because the currency is not itself gold, the monetary manipulators can remove the gold backing further and further into the background without affecting the nature of the paper as currency, at least nominally. Thus, a redeemable currency can be converted into a contingently redeemable or conditionally redeemable currency through temporary suspension of specie payments, as happened repeatedly during the 19th century. And then into a full-fledged irredeemable currency through permanent suspension of specie payments, as with Federal Reserve notes after 1933 domestically and 1971 internationally. Yet to the average citizen, whose most serious liability is mental inertia, even though a paper currency's promise of redemption has been dishonored, it remains currency. Thus one grasps that the so-called right to redemption attached to any paper currency is actually a liability, inasmuch as it exposes the holders of that currency to repudiation because they possess only the paper, not the gold. Even in the best of times, the holders of redeemable paper currency are not economically and politically independent. Rather, they depend upon the honesty and the competence of the money managers. This is why America's founding fathers, who were all very realistic individuals, denominated redeemable paper currency as bills of credit. They knew that such bills' value in gold or silver always depended upon the issuer's credit. That is, ultimately, the issuer's honesty and ability to manage their financial affairs. The unavoidable trouble with bills of credit, though, is that they can and usually do turn out to be bills of discredit. When the holders discover that the money managers are dishonest and incompetent, or worse, as is the situation today, highly competent at dishonesty. Then the holders of paper currency suddenly realize how unwise it is to allow the gold to be held by the very people with the greatest incentive and the uniquely favorable opportunity to steal it. But when these people refuse to redeem the paper currency, what can the holders of the currency do to protect themselves? Well, what were they able to do in 1933 and 1971? Nothing, right? If the holders of the Federal Reserve notes had enjoyed an effective, enforceable right to the gold that the Federal Reserve System and the Treasury of the United States promised to pay in redemption of those notes, that is, if the currency had been redeemable in the only meaningful sense, namely, that redemption was absolutely assured as a matter of law, in fact, the gold seizures of 1933 and 1971 would never have occurred. Thus, redeemable currency of the pre-33 and pre-71 type did not protect the holders of that currency. Instead, it turned out to be the very device used to deceive, defraud, and dispossess them of gold. proving in the most palpable manner that a society's acceptance of redeemable currency is the product of confusion and the invitation to inevitable economic and political disaster. Now, in The Theory of Money and Credit, Ludwig von Mises outlined a proposal for returning a Federal Reserve note to redeemability in gold. And no doubt, coming from that source, it is a workable approach. But even assuming arguendo that it could be done, why should it be done? A plan of this type offers no more than a delusive hope. Consider the demerits. First and foremost, the goal is not constitutional, because every form of redeemable currency put out through the Federal Reserve System is by definition a governmental bill of credit, which Congress has no authority to emit directly or indirectly. Moreover, the Federal Reserve System is a corporative state banking cartel, indistinguishable from the very types of cartels set up under the National Industrial Recovery Act and the Bituminous Coal Conservation Acts, which the Supreme Court of the United States declared unconstitutional without one dissenting vote in the Schechter and Carter cases in the mid-1930s. But leaving aside questions of constitutionality, turning to matters of simple fact, the plan for returning the Federal Reserve System to redemption of its notes in gold retains the fascistic Federal Reserve System's banking cartel, which will perpetuate factionalism at the heart of America's economy. That's an old-fashioned word, factionalism. But in the Federalist Number 10, James Madison defined it. A faction, according to his definition, is a number of citizens, whether amounting to a majority or minority of the whole, who are united and actuated by some common impulse of passion or of interest adverse to the rights of other citizens or to the permanent and aggregate interests of the community. And then he went on to point out what he considered egregious forms of factionalism, the first of which was, and I quote, a rage for paper money. So this passage seems to have been penned specifically for the Federal Reserve System and the financial community of which it is the cornerstone. For if no one can possibly deny that this particular edifice does serve one very narrow set of very special, very selfish interest groups at the expense of everyone else. Neither is it deniable that together with its satellites and clients, the Federal Reserve System holds the entire country hostage to the financial community's negligence, incompetence, venality, corruption, and even criminality. Because if the system is not exonerated and bailed out repetitively from the consequences of its own blunders and sordid excesses, as it has been, serially and under conditions of increasing severity and cost since 1932, then its managers and clients threaten, either implicitly or, as with the TARP bailouts, explicitly, to take down the entire national economy, and with it, this country as a whole, bringing about untold political and social dislocations, disturbances, distress, and destruction. This is the essence of malignant factionalism. Well, the plan for returning the Federal Reserve System to redemption of its notes in gold is also economically psychotic. It does not rein in fractional reserve banking and the destructive Ponzi schemes fractional reserve banking practices. Rather, it presumes that fractional reserve banking will continue to operate indefinitely, just as it has in the past, supposedly to be stabilized by the Federal Reserve System and a resurrected pseudo-gold standard. But as both theory and history attest, it is fractional reserve banking that has made a stable gold standard of the traditional type impossible. So the plan is bottomed on the self-contradictions that a system antithetical to a gold standard can be stabilized by a gold standard, and that a gold standard will long remain an integral component of a system, the normal operations of which a gold standard constrains. The plan for returning the Federal Reserve System to redemption of its notes in gold, and therefore administering the national stock of currency and credit on that basis, is in the final analysis a scheme of central economic planning, employing bureaucratic managers to maintain a fixed rate of redemption of paper currency in gold in the face of ever-changing conditions in the free market, and also the tendency to Ponzification of fractional reserve banks and the financial community allied with them. But is not the salient lesson of the 20th century that central economic planning does not work? No matter how many computers and information technology gurus are put to the task. On the other hand, if the Federal Reserve System has proven to be such a good idea since 1913, 1933, 1971, or perhaps even the last couple of years, then why should not its marvelous principles of organization, control, and concern for the welfare of average Americans be extended to all other necessary commodities, such as food, clothing, shelter, personal transportation, healthcare, to name a few? Why should not America resurrect and reinstitute the National Industrial Recovery Act? Well, I'll tell you something. This is exactly what's going to happen. In fact, if not perforce of some statute, because the tail, the Federal Reserve System, will end up wagging the dog, the rest of the economy, and if the tail is fascistic in character, then the dog will eventually become fascistic in character. Central fascistic control of the pricing system through manipulation of currency and credit must eventually lead to central fascistic control of the entire productive system, which will require police state mechanisms to keep the bulk of the population in line as common American standards of living decline to second or even third world levels. The plan for returning the Federal Reserve System redemption of notes and gold is also politically impractical, if not wholly implausible, because any such reform has to be accomplished where? At the level of the Federal Reserve System through the general government, Congress, the executive branch. But what are we being told today by these people? Precisely that we need to set up a new monetary and banking system at the supranational level. So it's highly unlikely that a response appropriate to this problem will come from Congress. But even assuming arguendo the political problem of control or influence over the general government, the Federal Reserve System could be solved, there are various intractable problems, practical in nature. The plan for returning the Federal Reserve System to redemption in gold depends upon using the gold in the national gold stock in the initial round of redemption. Well, that opens some interesting questions. How much gold is actually there? How much of that gold is encumbered in some way so that it cannot be used for redemption? And if sufficient gold is or could be made available for redemption tomorrow, then why is the Secretary of the Treasury not even now fulfilling his statutory obligation under Title 31 of the United States Code, Section 5119, Subsection A, to redeem gold certificates owned by the Federal Reserve banks at times and in amounts the Secretary decides are necessary to maintain the equal purchasing power of each kind of United States currency at the statutory value of gold in relation to gold certificates of, what is that? 42 2/9 dollars per ounce. 31 U.S.C. 5117, subsection B. Not $1,400 an ounce. And notwithstanding the limitations on judicial relief that are already set out in Title 31 of the U.S. Code. Under this reform, will individuals be entitled to enforce their claims to redemption of Federal Reserve notes and actual gold by obtaining from the courts judgments, injunctions, other orders of that type that require the Federal Reserve banks and the Treasury to pay out gold in exchange for those notes at some fixed rate? Or will the supposed right of redemption be, as it always has been, a toothless tiger? And then we could ask such questions as, what rate of exchange should a Federal Reserve dollar bill be redeemed for gold? Well, that isn't such a big problem because Title 12 of the United States Code, Section 411, doesn't tell us at what rate it should be redeemed. That's going to be left in the province of Congress and the Treasury Department. But assuming that they could fix such a number tomorrow, and presuming that it was economically correct at that point in time, how will that new rate of exchange be maintained? In light of the serial illegalities and duplicities of the past that have brought America to the sorry pass of the present, what new checks and balances will be necessary and sufficient to convince a doubting nation and a world that the same swindle will not be allowed to be perpetrated once again? Obviously, implementing a so-called price rule is not even a simplistic answer. That was the basis of the original Federal Reserve Act, the price rule of $20.67 per ounce of gold, and we all know how that worked. Without an absolutely enforceable constitutional guarantee, and by that is meant a guarantee enforceable directly by the people themselves because they either hold their gold in their own hands or themselves physically control the depositories in which their gold is secured, rogue public officials and their clients in the banking community can be expected eventually to ferret out one means or another to change to their special advantage the rate of redemption as was done serially after 1933, or even to eliminate it entirely as it was done in 33 domestically and in 71 internationally. And finally, I would say even if all these practical problems could be solved, what would be the point? It would merely give America the currency of pre-1933 or pre-1971, which has been experimentally proven to be unsound. It would perpetuate the fallacy of redeemable currency, namely if the Federal Reserve note is a dollar and some amount of gold is its backing. But sound, honest, and constitutional money has no backing consisting of or based on something else. It needs no backing because it has substance in and of itself. It is actual gold, not a mere defeasible promise to deliver gold. Sound, honest, and constitutional money cannot be repudiated because it does not need to and cannot be redeemed. It is the absence of redeemability, the lack of necessity and desirability for redeemability that constitutes the essence and provides the strength of sound, honest, and constitutional money. I would add just one more point here. The plan for returning the Federal Reserve System to any kind of rationality, let alone redemption, would probably require not only perhaps more perspicacity than Americans probably could muster, but above all, more patience. It would take a long time to implement. Therefore, it would demand the people's acceptance, or really the imposition, of political and economic discipline. Yet where would such patience and discipline be found when this country is riven by contending factions for which après moi le déluge are the watchwords? In particular, who would impose that discipline against all of the economically and politically powerful factions that want funny money in the Ponzi pyramids it facilitates? And how could such discipline be maintained in the face of the monumental, arguably unpayable debt of the general government, which Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff of Boston University recently gave a figure of $202 trillion for the $202 trillion for the fiscal gap, all right? Would it not require the intervention of the armed forces to accomplish that goal? Government by junta in the sorry style of Argentina and other Latin American republics? In sum, the return to redemption plan is actually a self-deception, for it proposes to reverse American monetary history on the basis of the very principles and practices which that history has already proven to be unworkable. Which brings me to the third option, the adoption on a state-by-state basis of a new, sound, honest, and constitutional alternative currency consisting of actual gold as an, and ultimately the only, currency officially recognized by that state. Now, first and foremost, adoption of such an alternative currency would be an act of foresight because it would recognize that resuscitation of the Federal Reserve System is impossible. Secondly, and no less important, adoption of that currency would be an act of scientific insight because it would introduce a currency the objective value of which could always be verified or falsified immediately upon inspection. The objective value is a fixed weight of gold. It would be objective because an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold everywhere throughout the world, no matter what economic, political, or social conditions prevail. Under this plan, a specific weight of gold and only that weight of gold would become the state's official monetary unit. Thus, the holder of the currency himself would possess and own the gold, because gold would be the currency. Third, in the scientific spirit, an alternative gold currency would allow for more than one experiment to be conducted. Indeed, as many as 50 such experiments in all of the several states would be possible. If one should fail, it would do so only locally, not nationally. If it succeeded, it could be expanded quickly and easily enough elsewhere. Fourth, adoption of an alternative gold currency could be accomplished incrementally and gradually, allowing the market to set and equilibrate prices as more and more people employed the new currency in preference to Federal Reserve notes. We would have no sudden economically disorienting jump from the Federal Reserve system to gold. Fourth, quite unlike the Federal Reserve system, an alternative currency consisting of gold would be fully constitutional because the Supreme Court has already ruled on two separate occasions that the states are not bound to use as their currency a currency emitted by Congress. In particular, they may choose to employ gold in preference to irredeemable paper currency, even when Congress has declared that paper currency to be legal tender. So the adoption of this alternative currency would return each state to the rule of law with respect to money. Sixth, introduction of an alternative currency wouldn't depend upon a state's having any gold in her treasury at the beginning of the process. Indeed, adoption of the alternative currency would bring gold into the state's treasury. Seventh, employment of this currency would not involve a state in the rat's nest of central economic planning. The state would not be required to attempt to regulate the supply of money against a price level or to fix interest rates or to engage in any of the other political economic manipulations characteristic of a central bank. Then adoption of alternative currency would not serve only one set of special interest groups. In particular, adoption of such a currency would facilitate the absolute separation of private banking from the government on a state-by-state basis, which Professor White has already discussed with us. No longer would bankers and their clients in the financial community enjoy the status of an economically and politically privileged class. Ninth, although it would bring about this politically radical end of separating private banks from the government, adoption of an alternative currency would not expose America to the economic equivalent of mutual assured destruction. I'm going to focus on this one just for one moment. At present, any attempt to reform the monetary and banking system from the top down can be thwarted by the banker's threat to precipitate an economic collapse. Yes, the bankers warn, you can destroy us, but more importantly, we can destroy you. If we go down, we take the economy with us. Without us, you will have no currency, no credit, and thereby no means of maintaining a high level of economic activity, so we have you by the throat. There is nothing you can do but to continue to allow us to loot society, then to bail us out when our schemes threaten to implode or explode. With an alternative currency, however, monetary reform need not come from the top down by attempting to abolish the Federal Reserve at one fell swoop and thereby throwing the economy into chaos. Rather, reform would come gradually and systematically from the bottom up by introducing a sound currency into the free market on a state-by-state basis in free competition with the Federal Reserve system. If the banking cartel and its clients should respond aggressively to this, they would merely hoist themselves by their own petard, because in any state which had adopted an alternative currency, the people would no longer be dependent upon the banks for currency. Whatever the bankers might do in a destructive vein would only drive the market further and faster in the direction of the alternative currency. Rather than mutually insured destruction, such actions would bring about the bankers' assured destruction. Now, there are all sorts of political hurdles, and Howard always mentions one, which is the problem that use of gold as currency, even right now, is complicated by claims of the government in Washington to tax exchanges of gold for Federal Reserve notes and exchanges of gold for goods and services, often called barter transactions, ignorantly by the taxing authorities. I suggest, though, that in the midst of a nationwide economic breakdown, any state which adopted an alternative gold currency would be in a peculiarly favorable bargaining position and would probably be able to negotiate some kind of accommodation with the U.S. Treasury. And if prudence did not prevail at the bargaining table, the state could sue the President of the United States, the Secretary of the Treasury, and the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System in the original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court for their failures to maintain all United States currency at par, which now, according to the statute, should be 42 and two-ninths dollars per ounce of gold. With the publicity such a suit would receive in the context of the present economic crisis, the matter would become a political issue to end all political issues, in comparison to which President Andrew Jackson's fight with the Second Bank of the United States would appear to have been an exchange of pleasantries. Under such circumstances, I ask you, would the justices of the Supreme Court dare to rule that the states are not entitled to protect their own people from economic ruin caused by the incompetence or corruption of the politicians, bureaucrats, bankers, and financial manipulators in Washington, D.C. and New York City? Would the justices dare to deny the people the right to ward off these vampires with a cross of gold? And if the justices did so rule, would not their obstructionism sweep away the very last shred of credibility in Washington? In that event, would not the states and their citizens then put into action Nancy Reagan's famous dictum, "Just say no," and simply refuse to comply with certain demands from the general government for taxes that hindered the use of the alternative currency? So, in sum, why are not more people among the champions of sound money, limited government, and free markets actively promoting the adoption of an alternative currency? That's actually a rhetorical question. The present economic crisis presents the best opportunity since 1932 for taking the steps necessary and sufficient to free the American people from their thraldom to the Federal Reserve System. Under the pressure of this crisis, common people are finally awakening to their predicament and sensing what needs to be done, at least vaguely, because as Samuel Johnson once observed, nothing focuses a man's mind more sharply than his impending hanging. Moreover, this may be the last opportunity of its kind for a long time to come, because if the financial community can succeed in jury-rigging some kind of supranational global currency and central bank, the Ponzi scheme of fiat money can probably be kept inflated for another 40 or so years, at least on the basis of the precedents we've seen in the past, until a final and utterly catastrophic breakdown sweeps across the entire world. So the American people must be convinced now, immediately, if not sooner, ahora mismo, as our friend south of the border would say, that this country's economy cannot be restored by mere repair or renovation of the existing edifice of money in banking, but only by its total replacement. The present structure is rotten to its very foundations and even below. It lacks the capacity to survive and can claim no legal or moral right to be saved. A new structure must be built from the ground up on a new site, according to a different plan with better workmen. If this can be accomplished, then for the first time in generations, Americans, indeed all of mankind, will enjoy honest weights and measures in the monetary field, and with that reform, we'll have a realistic hope to restore honest commerce and honest politics as well. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.